Let's go to chapter 7 now, lesson 7, and think through getting to know people and specifically seeking to discover where change is needed. Now, again, we have to be careful here. All four of these ideas, love, know, speak, do, it's not a process. They're things that we're doing all at the same time. So that's important because as we get into this chapter specifically, it can almost feel like an interrogation. And discovering where change is needed, it could be treated almost like either a doctor in the doctor's office where you're just asking the right questions so you know which prescription to prescribe the person, or even maybe worse, a detective in the, squad car or something, like what happened, what'd you do, how long's your jail time going to be, kind of a situation. And so this isn't an interrogation, we're not just ripping the person to shreds so we can solve their problem. Love is still part of the equation where there's gentleness, there's care, there's compassion. But one way to love well is to really seek to understand what a person is going through and what they're facing. Listening to understand is a helpful phrase that comes to mind as you work with people. We'll get more into that. Brief review of the book so far. You have this in your notes, and it's in your books as well. I put it on the screen because I thought it was helpful. Our hearts direct our lives, so God in his redemptive love is jealous for control of our hearts. Remember looking at James chapter 4, and where does conflict come from? Our hearts. The Spirit yearns in us jealously. He wants us back from our spiritual idolatry. And so that was kind of lessons 1 through 3. We really have to deal with the heart. Number 2, God calls us to be his ambassadors, representing his method, message, and character to those around us. We talked about this in chapter 4. When we become Christians, we're not just these, passive, life just kind of happens to us, but we're actually meant to represent Christ, to show his love, to show his care, to be his ambassadors. And that's kind of what it is to be the body of Christ on earth. And we have that opportunity to minister to one another like Christ has ministered to us. Living as an ambassador, number 3, means incarnating or showing the love of Christ, seeking to know where change is needed in a person's life, being faithful to speak the truth in love, and assisting people to do what God has called them to do. There in that overview sentence, you have all four of the pieces of the puzzle are mentioned there, love, know, speak, do. And so you kind of see how they fit together. And it's not so much a pathway as it is some, four things we're trying to kind of do all at the same time as we work with people show Christ's love to them. All right, let's get into this chapter. We'll start with those CPR things, the objectives here that kind of help to give us an overview. Wise people are not only people with right answers, but people who ask the right questions. We cannot get to the right answers without asking the right questions. So that's kind of the big concept. How do we ask good questions? Thinking about that personally, I need to ask good questions and avoid making assumptions about people that keep me from doing so. And I'll talk a lot about assumptions because we do this without realizing it. It just happens naturally. We think we know something about a person that we don't actually know, right? You can't know what somebody's thinking or what they're feeling in their heart unless they tell you. You can have guesses, you can kind of start to put the pieces together, but we can't know those things, so we have to be careful what assumptions we make. So, related to others, we look for opportunities to ask questions that move us beyond casual relationships and provide insight where ministry is needed. So he opens with a helpful illustration that helps us to see how relevant this is. So here's a question. Have you ever started to share a story from your own life and been interrupted by someone who said, "I know exactly what you mean," and they go on to prove how they actually have no idea what you mean? You were headed a completely different direction, but they jumped in and thought they had it grasped. We laugh because we've all experienced that, right? Which means if we've all experienced that, what are the chances that maybe we've done that to somebody and just didn't realize it, right? The likelihood is pretty strong that we have both had that done to us and done it to somebody else, because We tend to jump to conclusions as we talk with people. We think we know what they're talking about, and we don't. We don't. As a result of this, because we don't take the time and patience to listen carefully and get to know people and ask the right questions, we tend to just live on the surface level of things, right? We haven't really listened. So when there was something key that somebody said, this happened today, and man, it really shocked me. Oh, okay, well, that's fine. I got to get running. You know, I'll see you later. You know, we had a chance there to, whoa, it shocked them. I should follow up on that. Well, are you okay? You know, what? Tell me more about what happened. You know, is everything all right? But we just kind of get in our grooves. Well, I got to get to this, and I got to do this, and we miss those opportunities to listen carefully to what people are saying and follow up with questions of interest and seeking to understand. So this is helpful for us to go deeper. Even if we're not in counseling situations, it actually really helps us in the life of the church to get to know one another on a deeper level, right? And it's not wrong to have small talk, right? Small talk is not a sin. In fact, I think it's a really wonderful way that we can welcome one another the way Christ welcomes us, to say, hey, hello, it's great to see you today. I'm glad you're here. How you doing, right? And you know, we can't have a 30-minute conversation with everyone at church. We understand that. But as we have those conversations, to be listening carefully and to be ready when we encounter those scenarios where someone says, I'm okay. You know, you catch that tone of voice, or you catch that moment, it's like, wait a second here. It sounds like something's up. What happened this week? Is everything all right? You know, what's going on? And so we're ready to pause where it's needed and to go deeper and to dig in. So again, this chapter is helpful for us beyond just counseling scenarios, but in relationships in general. So as we begin, we're going to start with how Christ does this for us. So let's go to Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews chapter 4 and verses 14 through 16. He titles this section, Christ the Data Gatherer. And that's an interesting way of looking at it. But he's referencing these verses in Hebrews chapter 4, which I'll read, and you can kind of assess what you think about that. Here we go, Hebrews 4, 14 through 16. Seeing then that we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore come boldly to the throne of grace that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Now, a few things we can glean from these verses here. The first I've put up on the screen already, and it's this statement, not only that we can come boldly, but we should come boldly. Verse 16, let us therefore come boldly to the throne of grace that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. The therefore reminds us that there's a couple of premises that this is based on. Because some things are true about Jesus, we should come boldly to him for help. What is true about Jesus that it frees us to come boldly to him? Well, we look back in verse 15, and we recognize that we have a high priest. We'll put it positively. He can sympathize with all our weaknesses. So in the text, it says we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize. But put positively, we do have a high priest who can sympathize with our weaknesses. He gets it. He understands us. The word sympathize means to be touched by what has touched someone else. Right? Think about the life of Jesus. He knew what it was to be exhausted, right? Fell asleep on a boat. He knew what it was to be uncomfortable. He knew what it was to be hungry. He knew what it was to get injured as a carpenter, right? He had rough hands. How many times did he, you know, miss the, maybe not a nail, miss the stone and hit his finger or whatever. You know, I don't know how all that worked. But the point is, he knew what it was to suffer. He knew what it was to go through difficulty. And he understands what it is to be human. So he can sympathize. Second word there is weaknesses, which has to do with not just our physical weaknesses, but even our Even at times, our spiritual weaknesses. Now, we know that Christ did not have a sin nature. He never sinned, right? He lived the human life perfectly without sinning, but he knew what it was to be weak. I mean, that's just hard to fathom, that God humbled himself in that way to understand our weakness, to sympathize with our weakness. And so he relates, he gets it. He understands what it is to live in this fallen world. He puts it really well in this paragraph. I don't often just read from the book, but I thought this was a helpful paragraph, so I'll read to you here. He, Jesus, understands all the things that push and pull us. He understands all the temptations we face. He understands how difficult and complicated our relationships are. He understands the limits of human strength and wisdom. He understands the difficult situations in which we find ourselves, disloyalty, betrayal, rejection, pain, aloneness, etc. He understands the nature of families. Jesus has a complete understanding of our daily lives. He knows us. And because he knows us and understands us, we can come boldly to him. But that's not the end of verse 15. It also says, he was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. So again, we can come to him for help because he's one who lived the Christian life, understands our weaknesses, and did it perfectly. He didn't sin. So he's qualified to help us. He's qualified both to understand and to give us what we need to be victorious as well. He entered our situation. He gets it. And he can comfort and help us in those times of need. So he really models for us the way we want to minister to others. Now, we didn't do it perfectly, so we have plenty of opportunities to say, oh, I messed up in a similar way, and here's how the Lord helped me through my mess, and he's going to be present for you in your mess as well. But the point is, we seek to understand one another and sympathize with what we're going through. The problem is not the problem. The problem is the person's experience of the problem, right? And we want to help them through their experience and to see what's going on in their heart in the process. This happens as we ask good questions, we listen well, and we seek to understand. Let's talk next about the problem of assumptions. It's so easy to assume that we know what someone's going through. We tend to get in the habit when people are talking of preparing our response. And it's just a really good habit to get out of. Just listen to people. And by the time they're done talking, you'll have plenty of time to think of some way to respond. In fact, if you haven't been working up your response in your head, there'll probably be some logical question you can ask when they get done talking that has something to do with what they've been talking about, which, wow, big surprise, that's really great. You know, that's kind of the point, isn't it? But so often we just kind of go, we run with all these rabbit trails in our heads, you know, stories, oh, I went through something similar to that, or, you know, all these other things we want to say or ways we want to respond in return. And we've kind of lost the art of listening with focus to what they're saying. And not just responding with what I wanted to say, but either asking a follow-up question or making sure I've understood them. Assuming that we know what we need to know and failing to ask appropriate questions almost always leads to misunderstanding that blunt and divert personal ministry. So when someone has shared something with you and it becomes obvious that you didn't understand, or you assumed the wrong thing about them, that can be just a real dump of cold water on the conversation. And the person is really not going to want to share anything else with you. They may not be offended. They might be. But they may not be offended. But it's just kind of like, you know what? They're not really hearing me. They're not really getting it. So, you know, thanks for listening. It's okay. Don't worry about it. You know, they just kind of move on. But when we treat people sharing with respect and understand that it's a treasure to be treated with respect, it goes a lot better. So here's a little principle. Don't assume, ask. Don't assume, ask. We tend to just draw conclusions in our minds. Much better just to ask. Did you understand what I said? Yep, I got it. Well, maybe I got it. Why don't you tell me one more time to make sure I'm really tracking with you? Or could you give me an example? Or is this what you meant, right? Just to clarify. He recommends three things we can do regularly in order to guard against assumptions. Ask people to define their terms. Terms are one place where we can just often be on a completely, you know, different plane here. Yep, I think I know exactly what you mean. Actually, wait a second. When you said this, what did you exactly mean by that? Oh, that's what you were talking about. Okay, well, I was totally thinking about this. Carrie and I have these moments all the time, right? Where'd you put that thing? Oh, I put it in the kitchen. You know, you put the plunger in the kitchen? Why? Oh, you're talking about the plunger. Okay, now that's in the restroom. You know, it's just, you know, completely on different wavelengths. That's just life. That's just the way it is when we talk with people. And so clarifying is something that has to happen in order to be sure that we're not misunderstanding one another. Ask to clarify what they mean specifically by giving examples. Can you give me an example of a time this happened so you can help me understand what you mean by it and what you're describing? And then number three, ask them to explain why they responded the way they did. Again, just trying to get where they're coming from. The goal being to understand them. All right, let's spend a little time thinking about how we ask good questions. And he lays out some principles here that I think are helpful. First, always ask open-ended questions. Open-ended questions are questions that are not yes or no questions. And this, again, takes a little bit of thought. It takes some work to get used to that. Maybe you've been in conversations with people where it became obvious to you that you were asking open-ended questions. You ever been with people where they will give you the one-word answer that you asked for, right? And so you say, oh, did you have a good day? Yep. Cool. So did you work today? Yep. Okay, good. That's really great. And so now you're at church. Yep. Good, right? I mean, it's just, you know, you keep hitting dead ends. And so we got to look, it's helpful to ask questions that are more open-ended. And you're aware of that. You understand that. So those are questions where, you know, how, when, why, those look for a longer response more than just yes or no. So he has a little activity for you to do now. To jot down in your notes or in your book there, several open-ended questions. Let's say somebody came to you to talk about their marriage. What would be some open-ended questions you could ask them to gain information about their marriage? Okay, if they were asking for help, they're going through a tough time, what might you ask? More than just yes or no questions. So jot a few down, and then we'll give opportunity to share some with the class. So you've got, 30 seconds or a minute or something like this. This is like a timed test in school. Do you remember those? Those were so stressful. Did that make you nervous? All right. So anybody want to give us an example? What would be a helpful open-ended question you could ask to gain information from somebody who's seeking to share with you about their marriage? Okay.
How would you describe your marriage?
How would you describe your marriage? Good. Okay. Kate, you had one here?
How long have you been married?
How long have you been married? Good. Yeah.
What do you talk about?
Go ahead. No, Shirley, that's fine.
What do you talk about?
What do you talk about? Good. Mary Lee?
Could you tell me how you met?
Tell me how you met. Good. Yeah. Good. Others?
How would your spouse describe your
marriage? Oh, there you go. Yeah. Jim goes right for the jugular there. It was just I love it. Yeah, Kate?
I'd also ask if they work out at the home.
Yeah. Good. Good. All right. So good. You're doing great. Those are all open-ended questions that lead to kind of drawing information out, giving people the opportunity to share. And allow for conversation as opposed to just kind of short one-word answers. All right, next, use a combination of survey and focused questions. Survey and focused questions. Survey questions, I mean, this kind of makes sense once I explain it here. Survey questions try to get a picture of the whole scene, not just the particular problem they've come from, but what other things are going on in their life, what other pressure points, what other things are they experiencing. So these are the broader kind of questions. Focused questions dig into the specific scenario itself, right? So for instance, if we were a detective talking about a specific car accident, the survey questions we might ask about, you know, what kind of vehicle, how long have they been driving, what have you been in an accident before, right? So we're finding out about the broader picture of things. The focused questions might ask, okay, what time of day was it? What kind of car did you hit? You know, you get into some of the details of the actual scenario there. So both kinds of questions can be helpful. One is widely focused, kind of a wide angle view, and the other is more focused. So he gives a helpful illustration here that sort of helps to catch the way this works. So let's imagine you are at the end of a motel hallway. So we have a nice aisle here. You can kind of imagine that's the hallway. And so you have doors on the right or the left as you walk down the hallway. So imagine that is, you know, somebody's life, okay? And so as you walk down the hallway, the doors are all open, and so you might peek in the rooms, and you might notice some themes, you know, the color of the carpet and where the desk is located and, you know, certain things about the room that you begin to notice some patterns, you notice some things in common. But then there are a few rooms that you might enter into and look at it in more detail. What specific things are going on in this room? And what color are the drapes? And are they open or are they closed? And, you know, what's going on with that? So that example is sort of helpful, how there's some places where our questions are just kind of getting a broader idea of what's going on in their life. Other questions are meant to really dig into what's going on in this situation. All right. Next, number three. I forgot to put that up there. Number three, always remember that certain kinds of questions reveal certain kinds of information. And so if we start with this question, what is it that I need to know in order to help this person? What other information am I missing in order to serve this person well? That can lead then to the kind of question we might need to ask. So we're aware of the five main interrogatives, right? You can think back to, you know, elementary school. Is that when you learned those? I don't know. But at any rate, the five main interrogatives. But these are actually helpful when it comes to conversation. So the question what tends to uncover general information. So as I'm talking with a person, it's clear to me that there are more details I need to know and understand. What tends to be a great question. What did you do? What happened? What were you thinking? What did she say? You know, these things just get more information out. The question how tends to reveal the way something was done. How did you talk to her? How were you feeling, right? So it's asking about the state of things, the way something was done. Why questions? Those tend to begin to dig a little deeper. There we get into motives, purposes, desires, goals. Well, why did you say that? Why did you feel that way? We have to be careful with these. We can unintentionally insert insults to some of these questions. Why did you do something so dumb? You know, probably not the best question to ask in that scenario. we want to continue to be gracious as we ask questions like this. The next one he combines to how often or where. Again, this has to do with the setting, getting a sense for where this was happening and how often it happens. These reveal patterns. This is like walking down the hall of the hotel and looking in a bunch of rooms, right? How often does this happen? Is this common? You know, it's in every room. So yes, we have a pattern here. And then finally, when. uncovering the order of events, which can be helpful in making sure that I fully understand what happened and where a person is coming from. All of those can be helpful when talking with somebody. And coming back to that guiding question, what do I need to know about this person that will help me help them? Can lead to the right next question to ask. I need to know more about what the other person said and what they said in response. And so that's a what question. What did you say? Or what was it that they said again? If I find out that the words of the other person made them angry, that's a good time for a why question. Well, why do you think that caused such a strong reaction in you? Why did that create such anger in you? So those why questions really help to go deeper. All right, you get the idea there. Number four, ask a progressive line of questions in which each question is based on information uncovered in previous questions. This is just helpful. It shows that you're listening to them. And it tends to be that when somebody will say something, and if you're listening carefully, there will often be a logical next question to ask. Sometimes there's room to, you've kind of followed one trail to the end of its path. Sometimes it's wise to go back to, the main topic again and follow another trail. So there is a place for that. But there's often a logical flow. And he recommends asking yourself the question, what do I not know about what I have just heard? And this guards you against making assumptions. What pieces of this do I not fully get or fully understand? Here's one that's helpful for me. When I hear somebody say something, I just naturally interpret it a certain way. Okay? So it's been helpful for me to ask that question. Is there any other way to interpret what they said? Is there any other thing that could mean that I'm missing? And so sometimes to come back to some of those important phrases and say, could you say this another way for me so that I really am sure that I'm understanding where you're coming from and what you mean by that has been helpful to avoid assuming that I get it and that I know what they mean. All right, now for the fun part. We've covered the four helpful tips for asking good questions. You know your good questions. So we're going to actually do some role playing here and then discuss a little bit. So the first role playing that I'm supposed to do, I'm not going to do it, but the first one I'm supposed to do is call somebody up here and to begin to ask them questions about their marriage. Okay, so any volunteers? Anybody want me to just start digging it? Charlie, all right. We do have some things to talk about. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. So I won't do that. Instead, what I'll do is I'll just ask you about a recent trip. So anybody take a trip recently they're willing to talk about, willing to share about. I won't go crazy. This won't be an interrogation. But Dan, you're willing?
Hawaii.
Okay, come on up. Well, I'll ask you a few questions about your trip. Okay, Dan, did you go on a trip?
Yeah.
All right, good. So, moving on. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. Yes or no question. I failed, right? Yeah. Okay, so, Dan, what did you enjoy about your trip?
I think the scenery in Hawaii.
The scenery in Hawaii was beautiful. Yeah. So, what kind of scenery really stood out to you?
I think the greenery and the blueness of the ocean was really cool.
Yes.
Yeah. As I was flying above the ocean.
You got to fly. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So what were you doing flying above the ocean?
Parasailing.
Parasailing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Parasailing.
Yeah.
And who did you parasail with?
My daughter-in-law and grandkids.
Oh, so you got to experience. Now, were you by yourself parasailing, or could you do multiple people together?
We were three of us in a chair.
So what was sharing an experience like that with your grandchildren?
It was good to see maybe some of the enjoyment they were having and hearing them laugh and having fun. And then the other grandchild was definitely scared. Yes. Out of the boat.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, right. So, yeah. Right. So, yeah. Absolutely.
So
that's awesome.
Seen some sides of them that I hadn't seen before.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for sure. Yeah. What are some ways you feel like you know them better as a result of that?
I guess just knowing that they're little kids, you know, they still have fears and anxieties and and things, but yet there's other ways that they have fun and things like that. So
awesome. Cool. Thanks, Dan. Yeah. Great trip to Hawaii. Yep. Very good. All right. So now somebody gets to ask me questions. All right. So it says, ask one of the participants to be your counselor. Pretend that you're very hurt and angry, which I am, by the way. I'm just teasing. I'm not sure what to do, and so I need someone's help. Who would be willing to ask me some questions? And counsel me with my hurt and anger. Anybody? Del?
Yeah, how are you feeling?
I am hurt and angry.
What would you say is caused that? Or what's led to that?
Well, the other day, after church, you know, I just preached, I poured my heart out, and after the service, somebody said just something really discouraging to me, and it's like, man, were you listening to anything I said? It was just, wow, it really knocked the wind out of my sails.
That had to be difficult. Now, did you ask them to describe why they felt that way, or what you said that caused that?
No, I was just pretty shocked by what they said. I didn't really ask any follow-up questions. I kind of just, you know, found something else to go do and ignored them. So that probably wasn't good. But I just can't believe they would have done that. I mean, the nerve, right, of somebody like that. So I'm just trying to think of ways to get back at them. Well, now that you mention that, I shouldn't have just run away. I should have, you know, asked him some follow-up questions. Yeah, that's helpful, Del. Thank you. I see how I didn't handle that very well. That's great. That's right on. So, before this gets too silly, you should probably stop that one where it is. But yeah, no. But that was an excellent question. You know, if you could go back, how would you have handled it differently, right? So what that does is it forces me to think about, what am I responsible for here? What could I have done differently? And he caught that at a good time, because if you notice, I was drifting off into how horrible this other person was, which is what we do when we're angry. You'll notice that as you talk with angry people. They'll tell you all sorts of things about this other horrible person. And so to get them back to, well, what would you do differently if you could do it again? You know, never talk to that person again in my life. No. Anyway, yeah, very, very good. What else did you notice about questions and answers? So I'll toss that out there. So just generally from those two role-playing scenarios, what did you notice about question and answers and how they're helpful? And then as a side question to discuss at the same time, what are some things we can do to keep it from feeling like an interrogation? Right, so that we're not playing detective. How do we keep it loving and light? So those are probably not wise to ask you two questions at the same time. But what did you notice? What did you pick up on about questions and how they can be helpful? And then secondly, how do we avoid making it just like an interrogation?
I think one thing that Gal did that was really good was that he sympathized with one of the things that you said. He said, I could understand how you might be discouraged or feel upset about that. Mm-hmm. Did a follow-up question. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just the facts, you know. It was that he was making a connection there. But now I can understand that.
Good. Excellent. Yes. Yeah, so you have chapters, whatever they were, 5 and 6, love, going on at the same time as no, right? So you get some information from them, and you love them in that information. Oh, that is so hard. I'm sorry that happened. And man, that really has to hurt. And then you follow up another question. So yeah, good. What else? Yeah, Mary Lee.
Well, maybe not starting out with what, how, why, is interrogating. You say, may I ask you?
Yeah, even asking permission to ask is very polite and gentle, isn't it? Yeah. Hey, are you open to talking more about this? May I ask you, you know, what you're struggling with? Yeah, very good. Yeah, Kate.
He tried to diffuse your feelings from going further into your anger by asking, how would you redo it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. Good. Excellent. Very diffusing. Yeah. What else?
With Dan, it opened up, you know, he opened up and you were finding out a lot more information as far as family, what he enjoyed and all that stuff. So it opened the person up and just get them talking about what they experienced and their fun.
Right. Yeah. We need to go parasailing sometime, Dan. That'd be fun. Yeah. Yes.
Sometimes the nonverbal parts of communication are important too.
Mm.
Eye contact, body language, smiling.
Yeah.
Play a big part.
Yes, absolutely. The nonverbal communication. Are you engaged with them? You know, kind of looking around the room and doing whatever else, right? We're not really there. We're not really in it. On the other hand, if you have a heat lamp on them, exactly. So, good. Other thoughts or comments? All right, good. I think you get the idea. Let's close our lesson tonight by thinking through some of these overview things one more time. The big question of tonight's lesson, as you minister to others, do you ask good biblical questions, or is your ministry weakened by assumptions? We think we know something when there are actually better questions that we could be asking. So thinking more deeply about this, again, reviewing the concepts, insightful people are not the people with the right answers, but the ones who ask the right questions. We cannot arrive at the right answers without the right questions. Christ is our example of entering a person's world, understanding what is there, and being able to fully sympathize with us. Relationships that are trapped in the casual don't lend themselves to fruitful personal ministry. People tend to be hesitant to open up if all you're really willing to talk about are the casual things. So, personalizing this, I need to be interested in the lives of people around me if I want opportunities to serve as an instrument of change. I need to be committed to move beyond the casual at home, at work, in my neighborhood, and in the body of Christ. I need to ask where I have missed ministry opportunities that God has given me because I did not know the person well enough to understand and respond. And then finally, related to others, I need to be committed to asking good questions of people, not to just satisfy our curiosity, but to fulfill our call as one of Christ's ambassadors. I need to ask what I do not know about people that keeps me from effective personal ministry, and I want to be a sympathetic and understanding instrument in God's hands, one to whom people can come with confidence. We come to the Lord Jesus with confidence because He gets it. He understands us and He can help us. And as we deal in a trustworthy way with the information people share with us, they gain confidence that we will sympathize and seek to understand and be ready to help in their time of need as well, and can show them what Jesus is like in that way. All right, so you've got the homework questions listed there in your notes as well as in the book. And Lord willing, next week we'll plan to cover the second half of the No chapters, really seeking to understand people well and determine how it is that we can help them through their problem. Any other questions or comments tonight before we close? Yes?
I'm just curious, as we talk about how you look to others, one of the questions that I don't often hear asked is, have you talked to that person about whatever the concern is?
Yeah, right.
That's a biblical thing, but I don't hear that raised often.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
It seems like that ought to be a question in the process of helping deal with particularly relational things.
Right. Right. Good. Good. Yeah, excellent point. Yep. Thank you. Anything else? Yeah, Renee.
Considering your interaction with Dell, and I was thinking how he did not condemn you for how you were feeling,
mm-hmm.
but he opened
up and let you express
mm-hmm.
what you're feeling without, well, you know that it's wrong to be angry.
Yes,
you
right,
just,
right.
But heard you, and I think sometimes knowing that you're being heard and understood
yes.
then opens you up to receiving
yes.
truth.
Right, right. Good, great. Good comment. All right, let's close in prayer. Father, we thank you for the way that you know and understand us, the way that you deal with us with such compassion and patience. When we sin, you knew our sin from the beginning and you still sent your Son. You do not run from us or hide from us. You listen to us and you know us intimately. And you graciously and patiently help us through our trouble and our messes. And so we want to show the same kind of understanding and patience and help with those around us. And so help us to learn from Christ and dependent upon his grace and help, be helpers to others as well. We thank you for the way you know us and we praise you in Jesus' name. Amen.